Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on depression when we come back. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. Now our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks. And their objective is to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. Now that's correct. I'm not exaggerating. That's 90% over the next 50 years. You know, we ought not to delude ourselves into believing that we're going to stop all of these mad scientists, these philosophers and preachers and politicians in their insane scheme to enslave the entire world and impose a worldwide tyranny, a new world order upon all of us. But you and I do not have to participate in our own demise. We do not have to help them. We do not have to finance them, nor do we need to stand helplessly by and do nothing either. It's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following all of these crazy scientists and these philosophers and preachers and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000, this New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order a free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. See if it's for you. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, last time I said, I can't think of a better business to be in than food in a famine. Now, I'm not mercenary, and I'm not sitting here saying, gosh, I hope there's a famine next year, because I'm a farmer and I can make more money. Farmers this year are having some pretty good sales. I've been talking to some of the boys around here, and as they send in their reports or as they talk to me from around the country, wheat farmers have really done well, and corn farmers are really doing great. And as a general report, I talked to a cattleman out in Nevada the other day, got paid 16 cents a pound more than he had expected for his livestock. Now, that's good news for farmers, and we farmers have been taking it in the shorts for many, many years. There's some good times ahead for farmers, and that's assuming, of course, that the farmers can produce the products for the marketplace. But unfortunately for us farmers, and I got to tell you that last year was not the greatest year that I've seen here. Now, I sell milk cows. I sell milk cows for families. You know, say you've got a family and you want a family milk cow, and I break them to milk by hand, and their jerseys, and I sell them. And of course, there's a requirement. You know, we've got to have feed. We've got to have grass. And grass requires rain. And over the last 5 years, I've been observing that the rains come. Last year, we got our 40 inches of rain, but we got it at all the wrong times. And I've been making an observation this winter. This is the warmest, mildest winter that I've seen here in 25 years. It hasn't got down to zero yet. We haven't had any snow. We've had some pretty good rains this winter. Everything just looks like it's just honky-dory. And I look at the weather and I say, you know, the weather is upset here. This is not the normal weather pattern that we've experienced over the past 100 years since records have been kept. We had an outbreak of tornadoes in January. That's unheard of. It's not impossible, you know, but it's a very, very rare event. And I look in Bible prophecy and I see weather upsets are promised. And so that's not good for us farmers because we rely upon good weather. In fact, without it, we can't produce. Or we can't produce as much. Now, you know, I'm going to produce some, but I'm not going to produce as many. I'm not going to have as much. Now, I've got to have grass, and if I don't have grass, then I have to buy hay. If I have to buy hay, that takes money off my bottom line just to feed my cows. And so if it gets to be too severe, I don't make any profit. And if it really gets severe, then I lose money. And if it really, really gets severe, then it forces me out of business because I can't support all these cows. And that's where cattlemen are, and that's where wheat growers are. You know, a wheat grower, he puts a seed in the ground. But if it doesn't rain on it, it doesn't grow. And so he irrigates. And so as he irrigates, the Ogla aquifer keeps losing more and more water. It goes down, down, down. And over the next 15 years, it's going to go dry. Yeah, that's right. The Ogla is going dry. And so you're not going to be able to irrigate. And so then you're going to have rain. And if you don't get rain in due season, and you got a God up here that says, I'm going to turn your heaven to iron and your earth to brass, that doesn't sound very good. It could well be that if you don't have food stocked up, you might not be able to get through the tough times. So there's an example back in the Bible, back in old biblical times. Goes clear back, around 1600 BC, something like that. There was a guy by the name of Joseph who stockpiled food in Egypt for 7 years, and then there was a seven-year famine. And then Jesus came on the scene, and he said, and this is Jesus now. You can listen, you Christians out there, you can pay attention here. Jesus, this is New Testament now, right out of the New Testament. It's okay. You can listen. He said in Matthew 4, verse 4, he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And so when he made that statement, the only words that had proceeded out of the mouth of God up to that moment in time were the 39 books of the Old Testament. Boy, that's an eye-opener, isn't it? So from Genesis to Malachi, the only words that he had available to him from the Scripture that he could make that statement, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, was from the Old Testament, which contained that story about Joseph and the famine in Egypt. See, the New Testament hadn't been written yet. And John hadn't written the book of Revelation yet, so we didn't have Revelation chapter 6. So we didn't know about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Not yet. Now, these four horsemen that are talked about here in Revelation 6, there's one of them there that deals with famine. Famine. A worldwide famine. A famine that is so all-encompassing that it kills one-fourth of all the people that are alive on planet Earth. Now, last time I took a look, there was about 6.5 billion people on the planet. So let's just take 6,500, because I've got an old, in fact, my old Texas Instrument calculator here, it can't handle billions and billions and trillions and quadrillions. We're getting into numbers where I'd have to take my shoes off in order to count up that high. No, sorry, Bob, I got to get down to 6,500. Now, if we took the 6,500 times 0.25, that's a fourth. That'd be 1,625,000,000 people. You know, that's more people than live in China today. There's about 1.3 billion people living in China. Can you imagine a famine that would kill all the people in China, every last one of them, man, woman, and child? Boys and girls, that's biblical proportions. Now, it's never happened yet. Well, I've never heard of one. I've been around for a long time. And I haven't heard of a famine that killed 1,625,000,000, but there's a famine coming that's going to do that. Yeah. And then when that happens, it causes a lot of unrest. And then wars come about. Wars come about. And people get to fighting, you know, and they get to killing each other. And that's another one of those four horses of the apocalypse. It deals with war. And it looks like it's going to take another one-fourth. Now, I don't know if it's 25% of the original 6.5 billion or it's 25% of what's left. I don't know. I don't know how God calculated that one there. He didn't explain it to me. He didn't talk very much to me, so I don't have an inside track. Sometimes people write to me or they call me and say, God talks to me. I get real nervous when people tell me that God talks to them. They scare the hell out of me. That George Bush said that God was talking to him. God, that's scary. People that are religious are dangerous people. Religious people just scare the bejesus right out of me. I try to stay as far away from those kind of people as I can get. They live all around me, and I got to live. I got to go to the post office, every once in a while. But if you take a look at the history of religious people throughout time, boy, they've killed a bunch of people. They really get excited. Well, you can see what they're doing over there. Those are religious people that are blowing themselves up in marketplaces and killing each other, you know, over there in Iraq. Yeah, that's pretty scary, especially for us Westerners over here, and we don't quite grasp that. So anyway, getting back here to the Scripture, there's some stories in the Scripture here that deal with this thing called famine. And I wouldn't know. See, I'm just a crummy truck driver. I wouldn't know this if I hadn't read it in the Bible. And I read these stories, some of these stories here in the Bible, and I got to thinking, I was like, oh my God. You know, if this was to happen while I'm alive on the planet, this could really affect my lifestyle. I mean, you know, it could affect your lifestyle in ways that are life-threatening. In fact, I looked through Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. I did a pretty comprehensive analysis. I counted up 64 life-threatening problems in those two chapters. 64. 64 things that you have to be prepared for. And any one of them could kill you. That's a bunch. You know that? I mean, that's like driving your car from here to Springfield, and the highway patrolman says there's 64 traps between here and Springfield. An 87 mile, you have 64 traps. That's nearly 1 mile that could kill you. You want to go to Springfield with me today? No, sirree, Bob. I'd stay off the highway if I thought there's 64. But, you know, I can't do anything about these 64 life-threatening problems that are out there. God wrote about them. He told us about them. He said, now listen, you know, you got famine. Famine's one of these life-threatening problems. You either have food to eat or you don't. Well, back in Joseph's day, he stockpiled food for 7 years. I mean, he built some big silos, and he put a lot of grain away. And they got through the famine all right. They had plenty to eat. Now, that's because he prepared for it in advance. Now, I take a look at modern America, and when I was a kid, we all had a one-year supply, everybody. And we weren't facing any famines in 1943 or 46. We had plenty, but we always kept one year ahead. You know, we always had a year's food supply there in the pantry. And because of that, you know, food comes on the market, you know, once every year. Wheat harvest only occurs once a year. Now, it happens that you've got ADM and Pillsbury and ConAgra and Walmart and all these people that are handling it and saving it up. And then all you got to do is go to the grocery store and buy it. And it's there year-round. I mean, there's never been a time you went into a Walmart or a Kroger's or a Safeway store and they didn't have bread on the shelves. No, is there? Always been bread there. And you never had to stock up or save wheat in August and then grind it, you know, through November, December, January, and February and until the following wheat harvest in August. Hell, there's always bread on the shelves for you, hadn't there? Now, what I'm talking about here is a time when there isn't any bread on the shelves. And that's what's going on down in Rhodesia right now. They call it Zimbabwe. They don't have bread on the shelves. And in fact, this former industrialized nation, you know, one of the first world nations here 20 years ago, 1980, when Mugabe, or whatever his name is, Mugabe, I guess, took over. He took over an up-and-running first-world nation. Today, they got 80% in unemployment. The store shelves are empty, and gasoline is $237,000 a gallon. Now, boys and girls, that's coming to a city near you, where you live on planet Earth, and it's guaranteed by the creator of the universe. He says, I'm going to do this to you. And then he tells you why. He says, because you breached my contract, because you haven't fulfilled your end of the deal. You said you'd keep the Ten Commandments and all of my statutes and judgments, and you didn't do it. And there's a penal clause in the contract, and the penal clause, one of the penal clauses in the contract is famine. So I just zeroed in on that because I wanted to hit depression, because this depression then leads to shortages, and shortages then lead to famine. You know, if you don't have enough food and you're hungry, and if you're hungry, well, then that's called famine. So I thought I'd share that with you. Now, there's a couple of stories in here that I wanted to share with you. In 2 Kings chapter 6, there's a story in here about a famine, just a local famine, nothing big, nothing worldwide, nothing on the scale of what we see here in Deuteronomy 28, but it was still pretty serious to these people. Listen to this. It's in 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 24. It came to pass after this that Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, gathered all of his host and went up and besieged Samaria. And there was a great famine in Samaria. And behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 40 pieces of silver, and the fourth part of a cab of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver. Now, that's a bunch of money there. 80 pieces of silver. Now, a piece of silver traditionally is 1 ounce. Now, different societies have different measurements and different grams and different grains and things like that, but you know, round numbers. It's 80 units, and here in America we'd call a unit an ounce. So 80. Now let's take a look at 80, and the price of silver today is $16. So times 16, let's see, that's 80 times, am I right here? And then 40 pieces of silver. Yep, a score is 20. So you got 80 times 16, and that's $1,280. Now, this is for a donkey head. A donkey head. We're not talking about filet mignon. Now, a donkey's head, I've got a couple of donkeys out here, and I would guesstimate that a donkey's head, if I cut it off, would weigh about 20 pounds. They're kind of a small animal. Now, the reason I say that is because when I kill a bull, I can pick up his head. I cut off his head, and I can pick up his head, and it weighs about, I'm just guessing, you know, 40, maybe 50 pounds. I mean, they're pretty good size. And a donkey head is pretty small, and I'm guesstimating, you know, maybe 20 pounds. How much meat do you think you could get off of a donkey head? Well, I guess if you skinned it and then you boiled it and got the brains and all the mush and all the goo and the tongue and all that, and you got it all together, do you think maybe you might have 5 pounds? 5 pounds? Do you think maybe 25%? I'd be surprised if you could get 5 pounds off of it, but you know, now let's try this one out. Remember this same donkey head over here. Let's be reasonable, okay? And let's say you could get 10%. That's 50%. No, you're not going to get that much off of a head because the total amount of meat that you're going to get off of an animal is 50%. 50% is waste, and 50% is meat. If you can butcher an animal and get 50% off of that animal, that's good. That's good. It could go as low as 40%. Depends upon the carcass that you're butchering. But you know, we figure 50%. So I'm gonna be real generous here, and I'm gonna give you 50% butcher off of this donkey head, which means that 1,280 times 2 means that it cost you $2,560 in today's dollars, today's inflated dollars, $2,560 for 10 pounds of meat. That's $256 a pound. That's what those people paid for a donkey head. $256 a pound. Isn't that amazing? Could be more than that if they got 25% butcher. But $2,500. Now you're talking about famine. Now listen to this. You know, a dove is a little bird. And the fourth part of a cab of dove's dung sold for 5 pieces of silver. Now that's 25%. Now I'm gonna assume that a cab, I don't know how much a cab is, but I'm gonna assume it's a pound. And a quarter of a pound of dove manure, dove dung, dung SH, you know, dove SH, sold for 5 pieces of silver. Let's figure out how much that is. 5 pieces of silver at $16 times 5 is $80. And that's not $80 a pound times 4. You only got a quarter of a pound of it. Is $320, $320 for 1 pound of dove's SH. I cannot imagine eating dove dung. Can you? And yet, when people are starving to death, they will not only eat dove dung, they will, in Stalingrad during the war, this is a World War II story, they were actually boiling tree bark, grass, old shoes. They take old leather shoes and boil them and then drink the broth. Now, that's famine, all right. And an old buddy of mine one time, his name is Nick Minglin. He was in Holland during World War II. And they had it pretty tough over there, but in the opening rounds of World War II, the Germans came into Holland, and it just took them 3 weeks to subdue Holland. And in 3 weeks, they won the war, and that was it. Well, the Dutch now were under military occupation, and so Nick's parents, he was 12 years old, Nick's parents, in 1940, they took Nick, and they sent him out to the countryside with his uncle. And his uncle had a farm out there. It was 40 kilometers from downtown Amsterdam, 40 kilometers, about 20, 25 miles, something like that. And so Nick spent the war out there on the farm, and he said they had plenty. They had pigs, and so they had bacon and ham, and they had cows, and so they had milk, and they had beef, and they had cabbages and potatoes, and, you know, they had plenty of food. They grew their own garden, and then, of course, his uncle complained. He said that he had to sell all of his farm produce to the government at government-established prices. And he didn't like that. And he was really upset. They had price controls and they had rationing. And in the cities, when they were working, you know, in the factories, those people had ration cards and they had a black market. And if you got caught dealing in the black market, they'd put you in prison. You know, they'd really deal severely with you. Well, the war's going on fine until September of 1944 when the Americans and the British attack Holland. You know, they're pushing the Germans back. And so as they came in there, the Americans, they just tore everything all to hell. He said they ran their tanks through buildings, knocked them flat. They took their tanks and spun Louis out in the cabbage fields, and they just tore up the cabbages and wrecked the potato field, just tore everything all to hell. Now, they didn't destroy everything. Nick and, you know, the farm family there, they could go out in the field and they could get potatoes and cabbages, you know, that hadn't been destroyed. But it surely it wrecked a lot of food. And, you know, what's an American tank driver? What does he care? You know, he's got K-rations. He's got plenty of food. He's going to be taken care of. He's not concerned about the Dutch civilians that live in Amsterdam that rely upon that food out there in the countryside to feed them. And so Nick reported that after the Americans came in and they established military rule, he said, all of the people, of course, were dealing in German marks or German occupation currency. And all of a sudden that occupation currency is now worthless because the German government is no longer there to back it. And the American government isn't there to offer a new occupation American currency, and so there's no money. No money. Now, the people, you know, in the cities, they're working for the German war machine. You know, they're working in the German economy, the German-occupied bureaucracy. And all of a sudden, the Germans are thrown out, and the Americans, they don't have any need for the Dutch to build tanks and guns and a war economy for the American side. And so now there's unemployment. So all the people are unemployed, and they have no money. And they had rationing up until last month. And now your ration cards are of no value to you because there's no German government to honor the ration cards. There's no money. There's no work, and you still have to eat. So the people were so desperate in October, November, December, this is in the winter now of 1944, going into 1945, they're so desperate that they're wheeling bicycles, and Nick described it for me. He said they would have bicycles with no tires on them, just the rims, and they'd have a grandfather's clock tied to the handlebars with a person, you know, on each side, and they'd be wheeling that thing down the road 25 miles out to his uncle's farm, and they would offer the grandfather's clock for food. And so Nick's uncle would go out and get cabbages and potatoes and fill up a couple of boxes of cabbages and potatoes and give it to these people, and they'd tie it onto their bicycle and wheel it back to Amsterdam. And all the farmers out there were doing the same thing. There's no communication. There's no roads, no transport. You know, people just got to walk out as far as you can get and get what you can get and go back to the cities. That's where their houses are. That's where their homes and apartments are. And I said, God, that is really tough living. Well, of course, it's wartime, you know. It's war rationing and so on. Got armies fighting. And so this went on, and pretty soon Nick's uncle is taking diamond rings, watches, and jewelry in gold and silver coins. And he's got boxes and boxes and boxes, Nick said. He said up in the attic of the barn, they had boxes and boxes. They had grandfather's clocks and tapestries, and they had rugs and carpets, and they had boxes of diamond rings and jewelry and gold and silver and all this kind of stuff. Until about March or April of 1945, he was selling his what was left of the crops that the Americans hadn't destroyed. He was selling the cabbages and potatoes and one thing and another to these people. And he was just making a killing, kind of like farmers today. You know, they're just really making a killing because there's shortages. When there's shortages, you know, that food becomes very, very valuable. And finally, about April or May of 1945, about the time the war ended. See, the war ended in May 7th of 1945. And now Nick's uncle, what he really needs is batteries and gasoline and tires for his tractors. And he needs things for his farming operation. What he does not need is more grandfather's clocks, because he's got a bunch of those. He doesn't need any more carpets and tapestries. He's got lots of those. He doesn't need any more boxes of diamond rings and gold watches. He's got boxes and boxes of all of those. He doesn't need any more gold. He doesn't need any more silver coins. He's got boxes and boxes of them. When it comes to material wealth, Nick said his uncle was worth millions. But what he really needed was gasoline, and he didn't have any. He couldn't get it. He needed tires, but he couldn't get them. He needed seed. He couldn't get it. He needed fertilizer, and he couldn't get it. What he needed to produce, he couldn't get. They were in that awkward period. The Americans hadn't established a new economy, and the Germans had their economy destroyed and thrown out, and the people get caught in the middle. And that's what you see in these countries in Africa. You know, they have a revolution over there, and all of a sudden you've got all this discord, and you don't have production. And when you have a loss of production, and so 1946, Nick said they didn't produce anything on that farm. They didn't plant anything. Well, they had a little kitchen garden for the house. I mean, they had plenty for themselves. They could produce enough on the land to take care of that one farm family. But you see, the farm wasn't producing bins and bushels and tons of cabbages and potatoes for the people in the city. And that's what generated the famine in World War II. The war. And that's very common. Happens all the time. Wars produce food shortages. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the website as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about depression. Now, none of us today can really remember the Great Depression of the 1930s. There might be a few old-timers that can remember some of it. Now, I can remember the aftermath of it. I was born in 39, so I was raised in the 1940s when the Depression was on everybody's lips. This was World War II, and they're still talking about the Depression. Hell, they were talking about the Depression, how tough times were back in the 1950s when I was a teenager. It stopped about 1960. But when I was a kid growing up, well, I can remember all the old-timers talking about the Depression years. And I'm sure that, you know, after World War II, that up until about 1960, you can just about bet that those people are just talking about how tough the war was. Now, here's the lesson that we learned from Nick Minglin's experience in the war. He never missed a meal, and as long as he was on the farm there in Holland, they had plenty of food, plenty of food. But he told me about another story there that occurred in the village. See, they lived close to a village, and he said in 1943, there was a guy who was hungry. He was desperate. It could have been 1944. It was before the Americans got there in September of 44. The Germans were in full control. And he said, this guy's hungry, evidently. And so he broke the window in a delicatessen, and he stole a salami hanging in the window. Well, a few days later, the Germans caught him, and they prosecuted, and they found him guilty. And so they took him out to the shop. And they called all the people of the village together, and they brought a firing squad in, and they stood this man up in front of this delicatessen. And they shot him dead right there in front of the store. And they left his body in front of the store for 3 days. And it was in the summertime. Nick said it was in the summer. And he said the flies were all over it. The man's body stank. And the flies were blowing it. And at the end of 3 days, now you see, you can't leave the body there for longer than 3 days, because at the end of 3 days, the maggots are developing and they're eating on the body. So they picked up the body and they disposed of it. And I was somewhat, you know, horrified by the brutality of it. I can see shooting the guy. But leaving his body there for 3 days on the sidewalk in front of the store, I mean, that surely that can't be good for business. So as a store owner, I would not want a dead body in front of my store, you know, for 3 days. I mean, that just raises hell with business. And furthermore, I don't think that it would be good for the people in the community. I mean, this isn't good for the business atmosphere in the community. How many people want to go Christmas shopping, you know, when you got dead bodies laying on the sidewalk in front of the stores? So I said to Nick, I said, well, how often did this happen? He said, it only happened once. He said, he only saw it happen once. I said, well, was there very much theft? No. Was there very much food shortage? Yes. Was there very much food theft? No. All right, so much for that. Now, going back to 2 Kings chapter 6 to show you how bad these famines can get, remember, I told you before we broke in with the Nick Minglin story, that the price of a donkey head was more than $1,000 a pound. I mean, excuse me, more than $1,000. It was $256 a pound. $256 a pound. And the dove dung, D-U-N-G, that's S-H for you people in Brooklyn. A quarter of a pound of dove's manure, and these people are eating this. They're eating it. Is selling for, and how much was that now? It was five. He got a quarter of a pound. It was 5 times 16, which is 80 divided by 4, and it's 20. That's $20 for a quarter of a pound of dove's dung. Excuse me. It was a cab. That's a pound. Is $80. Yeah, it's $20 for a quarter of a pound. Boy, that's really getting down to where, I don't know, I think I'd just boil some grass or maybe boil some old shoes and drink the water. But listen, that's the report that we see here in the Bible. This is a siege. This is where an army has surrounded this city, and the people can't get in, they can't get out, and they can't get any food in there. And so there's another thing that's pretty disgusting. If you think that eating dove manure is bad or eating a donkey head is bad, listen to this part of the story. As the king of Israel was passing up upon the wall, there cried a woman unto him, saying, help, my lord, O king. And he said, if the Lord God do not help thee, whence shall I help thee? Out of the barn floor or out of the winepress? And the king said unto her, what aileth thee? And she answered, this woman said unto me, give thy son, that we may eat him today, and we will eat thy son tomorrow. So we boiled my son, and we did eat him. And I said unto her, on the next day, give thy son, that we may eat him. And she hath hid her son. Boys and girls, that's pretty serious. This woman was reduced to eating her own son. Now, I started this program, I got right into it here in Deuteronomy chapter 28. You remember that? And I said, I wouldn't know that this was coming if I hadn't seen it in Bible prophecy. Subsistence and survival, in the final analysis, is predicated upon Bible prophecy. What we're really looking at here, when we read the international forecaster, when we read the privateer or the money changer, we are looking at economic conditions in the year 2008. We are looking at foreclosures. We are looking at a loss of wheat production in Australia. We are looking at ethanol production and the doubling of the price of corn. We are looking at the doubling of food prices over the year 2008. And what does that tell us? What signals, what economic signals are we receiving over the past 7 or 8 years that lead us to believe that in the year 2009, 10, 11, and 12, we are going to see depression? In the last depression, we did not see cannibalism in Poughkeepsie, New York. We saw tough times, no doubt. In World War II, in Stalingrad, when those people were reduced to eating grass, bark, and old shoes, there were 237 cases, documented cases of cannibalism in Stalingrad. Now, there probably were more than that, because most people, when they're eating other people, are not running around advertising it and saying, well, by the way, I ate old Bob, you know, the butcher last week, or Tom the barber, and we had him for dinner, and we divided him up, and I got a leg and a thigh. No, most people would not be bragging about or talking about cannibalism. There's probably a whole lot more of it. Probably. But as bad as it was, there it wasn't as widespread as what we see described here in Deuteronomy 28, where God himself says, you're going to be reduced. And the Britney Spears, the women who are so delicate that they would not venture to set the sole of their foot on the ground, will be reduced to eating their own children. I read that to you. Remember the other day, first program? It's in Deuteronomy 28, starts in verse 53 through 58. And in verse 58, he tells us the answer again, because I get letters here, and people will say to me, what kind of a barbarian God do you worship that he would do these kinds of things to people? I don't know. I never met the guy. Don't ask me. I'm just a reporter. I'm just reporting events that have occurred in times past in 2 Kings 6 as a historical event that occurred. Then it was recorded. Some people say, I don't believe it. I don't care. I'm not here to persuade you to believe anything. I'm a reporter. That's the report. That's the historical documentation. I read it to you. You can go read it for yourself. And there's another historical report. This one's called Bible Prophecy. Deuteronomy 28 hasn't happened yet. Deuteronomy 28 is still to happen. It's called the Great Tribulation. It's the last end time results of mankind living his life the way that seems natural, normal, good. And there's an ultimate end that comes from this. And the ultimate end is cannibalism. Boys and girls, it is not good when you have 50% of the food that you're buying in your grocery store is being imported from overseas. Boys and girls, I don't think that's good public policy. I'm not going to change that public policy. I mean, after all, we elect George Bush and the neocons, and we presume the trade policy is being handled intelligently by our politicians in Washington and our senators and representatives. We assume that Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are working in our best interests, but I'm highly suspicious. When I look back in my lifetime, America used to be the breadbasket of the world. We Americans exported food all over the world. We solved the famine problem in Ethiopia, Nigeria, Biafra. All over the world, wherever there's been famine, wherever there's been a problem. In Western Europe, after World War II, I can remember gathering soap. We used to save the end of the soap bar and put those into packages and send all of those soap scraps over to Europe in care packages until about 1955. From 45 to 55 for about 10 years. Hell, they still had meat rationing in England until about 1952 or 3 or 4 along in there. So there was tough times over there in Europe, and I suspect that we're going to have some tough times here in America. We went through it in the Great Depression. I'm looking at Bible prophecy, and I'm saying I can't think of a better business to be in than food and famine. Said that to you yesterday. Nothing mercenary about me. I'm not sitting here telling you that I'm hoping that we have famine and people are eating their children and practicing cannibalism. I'm just here to tell you that it's coming, and I'm not going to bring it, and I'm not going to prevent it. I can't affect it one way or another. So I tell my students very plainly, I say, you should have a four-year food supply for your family. You need a four-year food supply for your family, minimum. You need raised beds out here in your garden, whether you live in Cleveland, Ohio, or you live in Mississippi, or you live out in the country and you got 25 acres or 2 acres or 5 acres, whatever you've got, you need to have some raised beds. You need to have seed so that you can take care of yourself, so that you can feed yourself, because I don't think that the Chinese are going to continue to feed us. Let me just tell you another little story here. In Gilroy, California, they have the garlic industry of America, at least they used to. And garlic in this country was never a big business. Garlic is not something, you know, that's a staple in life. It's a flavoring. It's an herb. And we used to grow it here in this country for about $16 a pound. And the Chinese were selling it for about $3.65 last time I took a look at it in the store. And so a question arose, well, do we want to buy $3.65 garlic from the Chinese or $16 garlic from the Americans? And the answer was, we want to buy it from the Chinese. And so we did. So our $200 million a year garlic industry has been exported to China. And so has a number of other industries. It isn't just steel and automobiles and big screen TVs and shoes. It's our food production. Our tomatoes come from Mexico, and our grapes come from Chile, and our apricots come from Turkey, and our garlic comes from China, and on it goes. Until now it's half. That means that if there's an embargo, if there is a worldwide economic collapse, which is coming, boys and girls, to a city near you, like it or lump it, then there's going to be a disruption in our food supplies, and you're not going to get those people in Gilroy, California, to just start up the production of garlic overnight. It's going to take a few years to get that back into operation. Years. Not weeks, but years. It'll take several years. You know, once I sell all of my cattle, it will take me years to rebuild my cattle herd. The production of one milk cow takes 5 years, boys and girls. A family milk cow has a history. I mean, you know, when the calf is born, the calf doesn't have a calf until she's 2 years old. And then she's still not a milk cow. That's her first calf. She's not a milk cow until she's third calf. I mean, you got a heifer. I mean, and you can milk a heifer, but you ain't got a milk cow. Milk cows are 5 years old. So if you want to go from zero to milk cows, you know, you're talking about 8, 10 years. Now I'm in full production and I'm turning out milk cows every year. But I want to tell you that if I go out of the milk cow production and then something happens, well, we want to go back into the milk cow production, you're looking at 10 years to replace what I have here today. From zero to where I am today, take me 10 years and I'd have to work darn hard to do that. And it won't take 10 years to produce garlic, but it's going to take some years to get the mechanization back up and get the market back up and running. So the moral to the story is every time we export one of these industries to some foreign country, it becomes an Achilles heel. And that's why I'm betting on famine. And furthermore, I see it here predicted and prophesied in the Bible. God himself, he says, I'm going to do this to you because. Listen to the reason why. He says, if you will not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, that you may fear this glorious and fearful name, the Eternal, your God. Why is he going to do that? Because they're not practicing this law. Let me give you one more here. In verse 15 of the same chapter, he says, but it'll come to pass, if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God, to observe to do all of his commandments and all of his statutes, which I command you this day, that all these curses are going to come upon you and overtake you. So from verse 16, on over here to verse 53, where it starts, you shall eat your own children, is just part of the 64 life-threatening problems that are facing all of them. So I come to you and I say, okay, as a reporter, let me report these facts. Now, as an educator, I come along and I say, now, we teach two schools here. And we'll take a look at these two schools in the last two programs. One is called subsistence and survival. Subsistence and survival is predicated upon Bible prophecy. I wouldn't be here teaching this school if I didn't believe that these prophecies in the scripture had real veracity. If they weren't imminent, if they weren't coming. If it doesn't come in my lifetime, it'll come in the next generation or the next generation. And so going back in time, over the past 2,000 years, every generation over the past 2,000 years, in fact, going clear back to Joseph in Egypt, we should have always had in supply in our nation, we should have always had a several year supply of food. In the United States of America, we have always had a several year supply of food stockpiled in Kansas, Illinois, and Nebraska. Did you know that? Yeah, see, in the 50s, I mean, we had wheat, we had that stuff stacked up in the streets, for crying out loud. America has always had a food surplus. We have always had a food stock in this country. I suspect you Canadians and Australians have been doing the same thing. You don't have that anymore. The food surplus has been gone for years. I say that's an Achilles heel. And then assuming that the nation, if your political establishment isn't going to stockpile food at Archer Daniels Midland or in government warehouses or something, then it should be the individual families should be doing that. Now, there's only one group of people that I know of in this country that do that, and that's the Mormons. They had a program for many years. I suspect they still do, but they at least officially don't admit it anymore, where everybody had a 1 year, 2 year, or more supply of food for every Mormon family. That just made good sense. It was what all Americans did in 1935. It's what everybody that had his head screwed on straight has done for thousands of years. Hell, I don't know if there's going to be a drought next year here. I don't know if I'm going to have to buy hay next year. So it's simply incumbent upon me to have a 1 year supply of hay on hand all the time to carry me through when there's a shortage. It's just kind of incumbent upon me to have a 1 year supply of food to carry me through from year to year and a 4 year supply for your family. Now, a family of four, to give you an illustration as to how this works, you eat a pound of food a day. That's dry food. So if you're talking about dried pinto beans or dried peas and wheat or something like that, it's a pound a day. 365 pounds for a year per person times, let's say, six people in the family, you need 2,190 pounds for six people in the family. That's one ton. It's 2,000 pounds. There's 35 pounds to a bucket. Divided by 35 is 62 buckets. That's 62 5-gallon buckets of wheat, corn, beans, and other dried foods for your family for a year. Does that make sense to you? Am I right? 365 times 6, 2,190 pounds. One ton. There's 100 pounds. Used to be 100 pounds in a sack of beans, 100 pounds in a sack of flour. Today, they've divided those up. Now they have 50 pounds in a sack. That's because we Americans can no longer pick up 100 pounds. When I was a kid, it all came in 100-pound sacks. So you need 20 100-pound sacks. You need 40 50-pound sacks to feed your family. 62 buckets, 62 5-gallon buckets, will easily fit into a closet 2 feet by 6 feet by 8 feet tall. They'll fit into a closet, a year's supply. Every family in America should have that. And if we did, you wouldn't be facing famine. Well, at least not for a year. Now, in the book of Revelation, there's a period of time that is talked about 1,290 days. Well, I don't know if you've ever done this before, but take 1,290 And let's just divide that by 365, then it's 3.5, 3.5 years. And did you know that that's exactly how long this famine's going to last, 3.5 years? Hey, I didn't tell you this. I didn't figure this out on my own. If I hadn't read it in the Bible, I wouldn't know it. But I think that this God means what he says, and I think he says what he means, and I think he's going to do this to us. I took a look the other day, and I noticed that Americans do not practice the Sabbath. They do not practice the Passover, do not practice the Days of Unleavened Bread. They don't practice the Feast of Tabernacles. In fact, we don't even practice just weights and balances. We got Federal Reserve notes. We practice usury and interest, which we were told not to do. We've got stocks and bonds and 401ks and Krogs and all these commercial instruments and documents and SIVs and ARMs and CDOs and, you know, you name it, we got it. And we were told not to do that. And I suspect that it's about to come back and bite us in the butt. Bottom line, coming back to bite us in the butt. So I would suggest that we start listening more to the God of Israel, the God of the Bible, and stop listening to George Bush and Dick Cheney and the Food and Drug Administration and the preachers out here that are telling us peace and safety, everything's fine. And the scientists that are telling us what we want is cloned meat, what we want is GMO, and the Monsantos and the big business industries and the big multinational corporations. And this is probably good business for Monsanto. It's probably good business for Food and Drug. It's probably good business for Merck and Pfizer and for the Republican Party. But I don't think it's good business for you, and I don't think it's good business for me. I think we better start thinking out into the future, 2 or 3 years, in the light of Bible prophecy, which we'll take up next time right here on the Law Hour and editorial review when we take a look at subsistence and survival and how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. That'll be next time. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order one, just call us and ask. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.